Aneurysms. Aneurysms are unnatural dilations of the vessels. There are true aneurysms and pseudo-aneurysms. In a true aneurysm, all the layers of the blood vessel wall are dilated together, and they balloon out either symmetrically, which is a fusiform aneurysm, or on one side with a little bloop, and that would be called saccular aneurysm. So those are two types of true aneurysms. And then the pseudo-aneurysm is basically not really an aneurysm. It's caused by a small hole in the vessel, which allows blood to leak out and forms kind of a pool of blood on the outside that looks like a saccular aneurysm. Aortic aneurysms are more common in white people than black people, men more than women, and older people get them more. Aneurysms and atherosclerosis share similar risk factors. People who are male, over the age of 60, have hypertension, and who smoke. And the reason for that is that aneurysms happen when the vessel walls are weakened, and atherosclerosis definitely weakens the vessels. So to repeat, the risk factors are age, being male, hypertension, coronary artery disease, family history, tobacco use, high cholesterol, obesity, and having a previous stroke. Most aortic aneurysms are in the abdominal aorta, which is the section of the aorta that extends into the abdominal cavity. 25% are in the thoracic aorta, 75% in the abdominal. And the reason that matters is that they will have different clinical manifestations. Thoracic aortic aneurysms can be asymptomatic. They can also show up with angina, transient ischemic attacks, coughing, shortness of breath, difficulty swallowing, and jugular vein distension. For the abdominal aortic aneurysm, you might also have asymptomatic, but they are often asymptomatic and may be found on physical exam or diagnostic imaging test. You might see back pain, epigastric discomfort, altered bowel elimination, and intermittent claudication. The complications for aortic aneurysms are rupture, which would cause bleeding, and in the retroperitoneal area, the bleeding might be controlled by other anatomic structures, and they will have back pain. In the thoracic or abdominal, a rupture of an aortic aneurysm often results in death due to bleeding. They will present as tachycardic, hypotensive, pale, clammy, decreased urine output, and altered level of consciousness. Clearly, I mean, your aorta is ruptured. That's the artery that sends the entirety of your blood to your body. So if it's fucked, you're fucked. Diagnostic will be done with a chest x-ray or abdominal x-ray, echocardiogram, ultrasound, CT, or MRI. And the goal for an aortic aneurysm is to prevent it from happening, or at least prevent rupture. Early detection and treatment. Conservative treatment would treat a small, less than 5.4 centimeter aneurysm with risk factor modification and monitor it every 6 to 12 months. Surgical repair is, there's endovascular graft procedure and open aneurysm repair. The open aneurysm repair will place a stent graft in place, which honestly looks horrible, but it's placed there where the aneurysm exists, where the outpouching is, the extra plaque and ridiculousness is all around it, but it allows the blood to flow through the stent graft instead of through that portion of the aorta. The complications would be endoleak, where the blood will seep back into the aneurysm, and then it could grow. And then also aneurysm growth above or below the graft, because the vessel is still weak as fuck, so totally could happen. And then aortic dissection, which we're not talking about yet, but is basically death. Renal artery occlusion can happen if the stent moves down to or up to or some fucking way where it's not supposed to be, or intra-abdominal hypertension. Nursing care, nursing management for aortic aneurysm is to assess their history and physical, monitor them for signs of rupture such as pallor, weakness, tachycardia, hypotension, abdominal, back, groin, or periumbilical pain, and or a pulsating abdominal mass. So it's not a fucking alien coming out of their tummy. It's a humongous aortic aneurysm. Teach the patients what to expect before and after their surgery routines, whether they're NPO, of course. Give them emotional support because there cannot be anything more scary than your aorta trying to kill you. Monitor after surgery. You will have ECG, CVP, UOP. Oh my gosh. Can we not with all of these acronyms? So you will have electrocardiogram. You will have central venous pressure. Urine output, pulse oximetry, ventilator, IV fluids, medications. They will need to keep an adequate blood pressure to keep their graft patent so that a clot doesn't develop from venous stasis or arterial stasis, blood stasis. Watch for dysrhythmias, electrolyte imbalances, keep that cardiovascular status fine. Check for infection. This is going to be rare because they'll be on a post-op antibiotic, but monitor the white blood cells. Watch for ileus because it's post-surgical. Listen to bowel tones. Neurological status assessments. We'll be assessing the level of consciousness, their pupil size and reaction, their speech, their upper extremity strength. Their renal perfusion will be monitored, of course, with their output. Urinary output, their labs will be looked at, creatinine, BUN. Peripheral perfusion is important, so we'll be checking those peripheral pulses to make sure everything is all good. And then teach the patients to avoid heavy lifting after surgery for 6 weeks. Gradually increase their activity. They're going to have common side effects from this: fatigue, poor appetite. And you'll teach them to monitor their own pulses and the color and temperature of their extremities. And basically thank their lucky stars they're still alive. Okay, this is the cardiac unit. And I'm going to start probably from easiest to most difficult. So starting with peripheral arterial disease. Non-modifiable risk factors for PAD include increasing age, being male, and having a family history of peripheral arterial disease. Modifiable risk factors include smoking, obesity, and having a sedentary lifestyle, and also diabetes, dyslipidemia, and hypertension. Those are all the risk factors. The most common cause of peripheral arterial disease is atherosclerosis. Atherosclerosis takes years to build up, and eventually the lumen of the vessel becomes so narrow that it reduces the perfusion to the rest of the body. In most cases, PAD is going to affect the arteries supplying the legs. The tiny little arteries are not going to get blood all the way down to the tissues that need it, and it causes ischemia of the tissue, which causes a cramping pain, which is also called intermittent claudication. And in addition to intermittent claudication, the muscles start to work harder and demand more oxygen, and they don't get it because the arteries aren't supplying it. And they will also switch from aerobic to anaerobic metabolism and produce lactic acid, which builds up and causes more pain. So the legs are screaming for what they're not going to get. It can also happen in the calves, feet, thighs, hips, or butt. With PAD, you do not want to elevate to relieve the pain because the pain is caused by the blood not reaching the extent of the arteries. So that would make it worse. Signs and symptoms of PAD are hair thinning or loss in the affected area, skin color changes, which might be pale or bluish, and that's especially when the leg is elevated, called elevation pallor. The skin will be shiny and tight looking. They will have weak or absent pulse, and some of the possible arteries involved would be the femoral, iliac, popliteal, or tibial. And as it progresses and gets worse, the clients will start to feel this intermittent claudication pain, even when they are not walking. And that they will also notice that it feels better when it's like dangling due to gravity working to get blood further down the tissue. Complications. The reduced blood flow can lead to nerve damage, which causes peripheral neuropathy, and they can lose sensation in the affected tissues. It can also become necrotic and develop wounds or ulcers that don't heal. The limb might be at risk of gangrene and amputation. And minimally, the muscles might atrophy. The test for PAD is the ankle brachial index, or ABI for short, where blood pressure is taken in the ankle and the arm, and the systolic blood pressure in the ankle is divided by the systolic blood pressure in the arm, and if it's less than 0.9, that is PAD. So normal is 1 or above. And in general, claudication starts to happen in clients with an ABI between 0.4 and 0.9. And once it worsens and it starts to give them claudication pain at rest, their score will be between 0.2 and 0.4. And if their limb is completely ischemic and they have ulcers and gangrene and it's just rotting flesh off, it will be between 0 to 0.4. Another way to diagnose is listening to the pulse in the involved arteries with a stethoscope, listening for bruise. And for the legs, that would be the iliac artery. And the other way is listening or looking with a Doppler ultrasound. The treatment for PAD is going to be antiplatelet agents like clopidogrel, aspirin, also statins to prevent further atherosclerosis. There is also patch graft angioplasty. And so the surgical interventions for PAD are pretty fucking cool. And online, there's some great pictures of patch graft angioplasty, also called SPA. And these patch graft angioplasties look a lot like Sally from The Nightmare Before Christmas, just full of little stitches and looking adorable. There's also bypass. They can add artificial vessels or take them from somewhere else in the body. Endarterectomy is where they basically surgically remove the plaque that's occluding the artery so that blood flow can resume. And then people who have gangrene or necrotic tissue might have to have some amputations. After those surgical procedures, just the normal post-op nursing care would be required. And for nursing care and teaching, we're going to say no elevation, no compression. Protect those extremities from injury because they will not heal as fast with PAD, or if at all. Also, those lifestyle modifications are going to be really important because increase in age, diabetes, and smoking especially contribute to PAD. So we'll want to reduce obesity, smoking cessation, bring down the cholesterol below 200, LDL below 130, HDL higher or equal to 40 in men and at least 50 in women, and then the triglycerides less than 150. Next up is chronic venous insufficiency. It's where the veins can't push the blood back to the heart, and it causes blood pooling in the legs. And this is because the arterial pressure going down to the legs is 120 and going back is 5. Risk factors for chronic venous insufficiency include people who are born female, pregnant people, people with low activity or having to be inactive, sitting or standing for long periods, aging, family history, smoking, and obesity. And it can also be caused by trauma in the lower extremity, having a prior venous thrombosis or an arteriovenous shunt. The signs and symptoms of this are going to be having a leathery, thick, brown colored skin. It'll be varicose veins visible. There could be itching, painless, wet ulcers, edema, calf and ankle pain with standing, which will improve with elevation and movement. So surgical intervention, they can do vein transplant repair or removal. And we would also have preventative measures like calf exercises, compression stockings or SEDs, and raising affected areas to decrease the swelling. Venous thrombosis includes just venous thrombosis, which are just clots in the veins. It can also mean VTE, which is venous thromboembolism, which encompasses both DVT, deep vein thrombosis, and PE, pulmonary embolism. And the reason all of that is all together is because the pathophysiology is exactly the same, the cause is the same, and often DVT leads to PE because the thrombosis will travel and then block the pulmonary veins. So, okay. Basically, Dr. Rudolf Virchow has three factors that contribute toward the ultimate formation of clots. Hypercoagulability is one, stasis of the blood is two, and endothelial injury is three. The risk factors for VTE are all related to Virchow's triad, and they can be remembered with the mnemonic thrombosis. T is for trauma or travel. H is for hospitalization and hormones, meaning estrogen. R is for relatives, which is family history. O is for old age. M is for having any malignancy. B is for long bone fractures. O is for obesity and obstetrics, which is pregnancy and early postpartum. S is for surgery and smoking. I is for immobilization. And the final S is for other sickness. Upper extremity DVTs are extremely rare. If they do happen, it's usually because of an indwelling intravascular catheter. What happens to people with a DVT is a swollen, red, painful unilateral limb and pitting edema. To evaluate and diagnose VTE, you will look at the history of the person, check all of the family history. Have they been bedridden? Do they have active cancer? Have they been traveling? And once that's established, you would get an ultrasound to verify the thrombus and also a D-dimer. The gold standard test is venography, but it's invasive, uses contrast, and is more expensive, so it's rarely used. If the ultrasound shows a DVT, then treatment with anticoagulation is begun, and that would begin with heparin, warfarin, enoxaparin. The antidote for warfarin is vitamin K. The antidote for heparin is protamine sulfate, and the same for enoxaparin. TPA stands for tissue plasminogen activator, and also an IVC filter, which stands for inferior vena cava filter. And that is used to prevent clots from traveling to the pulmonary system. The D-dimer blood test would also be looked at, and it is not very specific. There's a lot of reasons why D-dimer could be elevated, but it does point to blood clotting because the protein fragment that's detected with D-dimer shows up in the blood when clots are breaking down. So if I haven't mentioned it yet, the symptoms we will likely see would be leg edema in unilateral, so one-sided, pain, tenderness, warmth, paresthesia, possibly cyanosis. And then many people who are hospitalized and get DV or VTEs will have no symptoms at all. So that's fucking great.